You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have John Rubino with me once again. John is a popular financial website, but he really overlooks and manages a very popular website. It's one I look at frequently throughout the week, dollarcollapse.com. He is a co-author with Gold Money's James Turk of The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops, and he's the author of a number of other books as well. Thanks for joining me again, John. Thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me back, Jay.
Always good to have you with us, and always good to have you as my step-in host when I have to go away, and I'm planning to do that June 19th. I'm really pleased that you're going to be coming on to host this show then, and we'll look forward to seeing who you want to select as a guest. It's going to be interesting. I know you had Chris Martinson the last time, who's one of my favorite people, really good guy. So I look forward to having you give me a break as Mrs. Taylor and I take a little vacation. Anyway, welcome. Thanks for joining me. It's really good to have you with us again, John. And we were going to talk about oil today, and that was when we started to think about this week's show. Oil was above 70 bucks. I don't know, 71, 72, somewhere in that range, or even higher. I don't know for sure, but it was going up. And we were going to form our show around that. But in the meantime, oil has come off quite a bit. So it's 66 bucks earlier today, 66 and change. Do you have a view as to why oil is getting hit so hard?
Well, yeah, oil looked like it was originally rising on turmoil in the Middle East. The U.S. and Iran were butting heads, and then we had the North Korea thing, which scared everyone. And so oil is kind of a safe haven asset. People were buying it based on the expectation that that it would go up in price because of geopolitical tensions. Also, Saudi Arabia and Russia were making noises about pulling back on their production in order to boost prices. So for oil, it was a lot of things that when added together equaled higher prices. Since that time, though, yeah. The opposite has happened.
Yeah. I think Russia and Saudi Arabia came together and said that they would actually increase production or at least not reduce it.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out how to deal with the increase in U.S. production. And they really have two choices. One, they could flood the market themselves, push down prices, which bankrupt a lot of our new drillers here. Or they could just let us take market share and pull back on their own production and in that way push prices up so they make more money per barrel of oil sold. Mm-hmm. They chose the former after mm-hmm. flirting with the latter. And it looks like they'll produce more. And other things being equal, that will hurt our drillers, but maybe not so much. If oil stays around the 60, what is it, 66 today for West Texas Intermediate? Yeah. Yeah, that's still a profitable level for just about everybody. So the oil market, if it stays here, becomes a non-factor. But if it kept on going up, there were a lot of reasons to be worried because rising oil prices are dangerous for a lot of different parts of the financial sector. It would have pumped up inflation for one thing, which would have led the Fed to feel obligated to raise interest rates more. And so you take that away and you get less pressure on interest rates, which is one of the reasons that U.S. long-term rates have plunged lately. The 10-year Treasury yield was well above 3% a couple of weeks mm-hmm. ago, and now it's 280 something. So, in some ways, there's a relaxation in the financial markets, and then in other ways, for instance, stock prices are tanking today. There's heightened tension. So, what we're seeing today is kind of a flow of capital away from risky assets and towards relatively safe assets.
Yeah, it certainly is a risk-off day for sure. It's a big risk-off day. But, I mean, In light of falling interest rates, one might expect otherwise for the stock market to be a bit stronger, not certainly not to tank as it has. How do you explain that?
Well, it depends on why interest rates are falling. It's because everybody's terrified and money's flowing into treasuries, a lot of that money would have come out of equities. And that's kind of what's happening. And the main reason for it is Italy. My people are once again causing trouble in the global financial
system. Yes, that's right. You folks with a vowel at the end of your name are all responsible for what's going on today.
Yes, yeah. We are. We're just troublemakers.
Right.
And the general story in Italy is that it's been hard for them to manage in a monetary system that was designed by and for Germany. In other words, a fairly sound money system is hard for a country that's debt-ridden and not very efficient. In Italy's recent history, prior to the adoption of the euro, they would run up a bunch of debts and have a crisis, and then they would just devalue the lira, kind of wipe the slate clean and start over. They don't have that ability now with the euro. The euro is going to do what the euro is going to do, and usually that's what Germany wants it to do, and not necessarily what Italy wants. And so they're stuck with a currency that's too strong for their national financial habits, and they're running up huge amounts of debt. Their banking system is a mess, and so most recently they responded to that set of problems by electing a couple of parties, or by giving most of the votes to a couple of parties that were populist, one from the left, one from the right, and they're anti-euro and anti-austerity, and they've been trying to form a government. They have the votes to do it, but the president of Italy, who has to sign off on their people, on the people they put in place in the government, refuses to sign off on their guy for premier, and has put a former IMF official in instead. And that enraged Italy's voters, and they're going to have a flash election, which might swing even further in the populist direction after this usurpation of electoral power by the president, who didn't get elected this time around. That could lead to an election that's even more unsettling for financial markets than the last one. And in some ways, that's what the global financial system is reacting to right now. The prospect of an even more anti-euro, anti-austerity Italy that might just pull out of the eurozone and go back to the lira, which raises all kinds of questions, like what happens to all the Italian debt that's denominated in euros and that is held by banks or pension funds or the European Central Bank? Does it just convert over to lira at a big discount and everybody have to take a loss, or does something else happen? Nobody knows. So nobody wants to find out either, outside of the populist parties in Italy. And so this could have legs, could go further from here.
So let me ask you, so you have a populist of the left and a populist of the right. You've got both of them trying to form a coalition, kind of?
Yeah.
So it's really anti-establishment is what it is. And some probably want to go more socialist, and some want to go more free market.
You get beyond the we don't want the euro anymore and we don't want austerity anymore. And then you've got a completely different set of policies to the extent that they have coherent policies. Populist parties tend to focus on opposing the elite that is bleeding dry the 99%. That's usually the platform of a populist party. And then once they get in office, they look around and think, oh my God, we have to make decisions about all this other stuff that we haven't even thought about. And so you get chaos. And now you've got two populist parties who below the headline planks in their platforms are very different. So it's not clear that they could run a coherent government in any event, which just adds to the anxiety in the financial markets. Italy is not an inconsequential country. They're the third biggest economy in the eurozone. So this is vastly more dangerous than Brexit, for instance, because Great Britain wasn't even in the eurozone. They have their own currency, and they still to this day can't figure out how to separate themselves from the European Union. So let Italy try to pull out of the eurozone, and you have potential chaos. Now, nobody knows how it'll play out exactly, but it looks harder to do than what Britain is right now failing to do. So everybody's worried, with good reason.
So we've got the pigs, that's Portugal, Italy, which we're talking about, Greece, and Spain. Portugal, Greece, and Spain are considered to be, well, Greece has had its problems, but Portugal and Spain now, are they considered, they're next on the docket for some problems potentially?
Well, Portuguese bonds have been tanking lately in sympathy with Italy's. Spain, interestingly, their bonds haven't behaved as badly, but they've got a political crisis too. There's a big scandal going on right now in which the sitting president of Spain might get kicked out of office, and his party might be replaced by some other party, a coalition of left-right populist parties.
Oh, boy.
And so far, people aren't taking that prospect too seriously based on how Spanish securities are trading. But should it move from possible to probable, and then there's a big problem. And Spain is big, too. You know, I think they're right behind Italy in terms of GDP within the Eurozone. So if you have the, let's say, third and fourth biggest countries in a 20-some country family getting ready to pull out, then you've got the potential for a very serious currency crisis that is existentially threatening to the euro. So from the point of view of the global financial system, when the second most important currency is faced with an existential threat, you want to pull in your horns. You don't want to own a bunch of financially risky assets because you just don't know what's going to happen in the future. So that, hence the risk off in the financial.
Hence a stronger dollar, a stronger treasury, treasury instruments in the U.S. today. Rates, I mean, it's pretty remarkable that the 10-year has collapsed as much as it has. Collapsed, I don't know, maybe too strong a word. It's fallen dramatically. Where do we go from here? You know, Michael Oliver, who we have on during the first segment almost every week, is, again, reiterating his view that the dollar is in a bear market. I think he sees this as a counter-trend rally. He sees that for the treasuries as well. I guess nobody knows for sure, unless you do, John. And if you do, I hope you'll tell us.
Well, Jay, all fiat currencies are in a long-term bear market because they're all going to zero. They're a flawed concept that will fail in the not-too-distant future. But where the stuff we were talking about before gets really interesting, even more interesting in the Chinese curse sense, is that the dollar is spiking right now because of worried capital flowing into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And the emerging markets, countries like Mexico and Brazil and Argentina and China, over the past few years have all issued a lot of dollar-denominated bonds, thinking that the dollar would fall relative to their domestic currencies, which would make those bonds much easier to service.
Uh-huh.
Now the opposite is happening. Interest rates, the value of the dollar is going up, which means these guys have to pay back those loans in an appreciating currency, which is vastly harder than the opposite. So you're seeing a lot of turmoil in emerging market stocks and bonds and currencies as people digest this new threat. What's going to happen to Mexico's finances if they have to pay back their dollar-denominated bonds with the dollar soaring? Or, you know, Argentina is already in the intermediate stages of a currency collapse. Venezuela is gone. Brazil is right now paralyzed by a trucker strike that is making it harder to pay back their debts in any event. You know, now they've got the terms of currency exchange rates moving against them at the same time that they've got civil unrest paralyzing the country. Nobody knows what's going to happen there. So emerging market securities, which were the darlings of the financial world for the past few years, have turned into radioactive hot potatoes. Nobody wants to own them anymore. So all of a sudden, Jay, the world has gotten even scarier. You know, not that it wasn't scary a couple of years ago, but in the intervening few years, including President Trump's antics out there in trade and in military and geopolitical affairs, and interest rates starting to go back up, and all the pathologies of rising home prices and extremely wildly fluctuating currencies. You know, all of this stuff is adding together to make the world a very dangerous seeming place. So it wouldn't be a surprise if the trend towards safe haven assets had legs from here.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, China has been trying to distance itself or sever its reliance or its use of the dollar in international trade. It has set up the it has its oil exchange now in Shanghai. It has its gold exchange in Shanghai. Certainly, Russia and China, maybe Iran, and maybe even Turkey and some other countries that are sort of forming trade unions or trying to. As I understand it, the oil trade now, the Iran, for example, won't take dollars anymore. They're demanding euros when they sell into Europe, and they're demanding. And they're not. And they're just simply not going to take dollars. And they can go to China and take yuan. I'm not sure how many people really want or could use yuan. It's not really that used in the international scene. So you'd almost need to have something more usable or something. The idea that you could that exporters of oil to China could sell forward on the oil exchange, and then if they don't want yuan, could exchange the yuan for gold. Do you think some people are making a big deal of that? Do you think that has any long term potential for helping China move away from its reliance on the dollar?
Well, long term is the operative phrase here, because right now the dollar is still the only game in town, because it's by far the most important currency out there in terms of reserve assets and trade flows. And the fact that Russia and China and to an extent India and several other countries would like to use their own currencies in bilateral trade and would like their currencies to be respected enough to be considered viable reserve assets, that's completely understandable. These are big, important economies that whose currencies ought to be also big and important in the world. But it's a ways away from actually threatening the dollar, because the dollar is just so entrenched. It's still 60-some percent of central bank reserve assets out there, and it's still a big, big percentage of global trade. But I think the trend is in that direction, just because these other countries are becoming more developed, richer, more powerful, more consequential. So it's completely reasonable that, for instance, their militaries ought to have more sway in the world, that their trade flows ought to become more important, and that their currencies ought to play a bigger role in the world. So just in a normal evolution, in which, let's say we don't have this gigantic financial crisis out there for a minute. We do, but let's pretend we don't for a minute. You would expect these developing countries that are becoming more and more powerful to have currencies that eat into the dollar's dominance. Mm-hmm. And that's happening. But it's a while away from actually challenging or threatening the dollar's place in the world.
All right. So the current crisis is... it is maybe slowing down that process, because the go-to safe haven is the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
I'd like to, just with a couple of minutes left here, I'd like to just run by an Alistair MacLeod topic that he's brought to this show on a couple of occasions, and that is the credit cycle. Alistair talks about us being at that point in the cycle in which rates start to rise, banks have to start selling their treasuries because they're losing positions. Of course, today they're making money if they're holding treasuries, but they're losing position on the treasuries, and then they take the proceeds and make loans into the real economy. So then you start to have more demand, wages even start to rise a bit, and you start to have, you know, demands, commodity prices are on the upsurge because money is getting into the real economy. And Alistair believes that that will continue to run until it breaks down. Do you see this this problem arising now in Italy and in Europe as something that could end that or make it a very short-lived final phase of the cycle that Alistair is talking about?
Well, every cycle is different, of course. They rhyme, but they don't match perfectly. But people have been waiting for banks to start deploying some of their excess reserves for a really long time. Instead, banks have been happy just to sit with with that money at the Fed and collect a little bit of interest for absolute free. No risk, no muss, no fuss. Big year-end bonus for bank executives, and it's worked out really well for them. But as you said, towards the end of a cycle, you do see banks start to ramp up lending. And for instance, that's happening in real estate now, where home prices are just soaring.
Yeah.
So to the extent that you can qualify for a mortgage and that you can find somebody to sell a house to you, you're going to be borrowing a ton of money to buy that house. And that's happening elsewhere in the market, too, where business lending seems to be up. And so it's following the script. But of course, something could happen to derail it if the crisis is serious enough to be a game changer. It remains to be seen whether Italy can affect the Eurozone in a way that would stop this part of the credit cycle cold. I don't know. But if it were to do that, then we could drop right back down into a 2008-2009 scenario, because we're plenty highly leveraged for that.
We've got enough
potentially bad debt out there to blow up, that as soon as conditions are right for that, we could see a crisis much worse than what we saw a decade ago, just because the numbers are so much bigger. Nothing ideological about this. We borrowed twice as much money, so we have twice the risk or more than
twice. All right, John, we're going to have to leave it go at that. It's not a happy picture you're painting, but of course, all of our listeners know you need to own some gold in light of of these things that are going on. Gold in place of fiat currencies, which are all going to zero, as you say. Thanks so much for being with us today, John, and I look to do it again sometime in the not-too-distant future, and look forward to you hosting the show, too, in a few weeks down the road.
Great. Thanks,
all right, folks.
Jay.
Well, that is all the time we have this week. Next week, I'm going to have Keith Weiner back with me again and Michael Oliver. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bonterra Resources, an advanced exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. Over the last 12 months, Bonterra has raised over $60 million and has attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based Vanek Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource in the second half of 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000 meters of drilling, where the dimensions of the Gladiator deposit have been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under the symbol BONXF.
Auren Resources is a technically driven, capital-efficient exploration company focused on delivering shareholder value through accretive project acquisition and discovery. The company's management team has a record of success in the discovery, advancement, and monetization of exploration assets. Auren's focus is on advancing its 7 premier gold exploration projects located in Canada and Peru. Auren's shares trade on the TSX in Canada and the NYSE American in the U.S. under the stock symbol AUG. For more information, please visit aurenresources.com.